Hi everyone, Chris here. It is a cold open, and the reason for it is that I need to explain that you're going to listen to an episode that we recorded prior to the news that came out yesterday, that Quinn Hughes is the newest captain of the Vancouver Canucks. The reason why I wanted to disclose this is that, as you long-term listeners know, Ann and I normally record our show Monday nights in preparation for Tuesday, which wouldn't have been an issue this week if we had waited till Monday, except we had some scheduling issues, so we decided to tempt fate, recorded Sunday thinking, what could actually happen? We'll publish Tuesday, won't be an issue. Well, guess what? It's an issue. So please understand that we weren't aware of what was going to transpire when we were talking right off the hop about the rumors of Quinn Hughes becoming captain. We now know it's true. We'll be back next week at the regular time and in turn, maybe have a mutual mea culpa. But until then, please enjoy the show.
6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust. This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I'm Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually, as always, by the goldfish extraordinaire, Anna Forsythe at A4Sythe03. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks for that, Chris. Yeah, not called goldfish extraordinaire because I forget things easily, although I do. My short-term memory isn't great.
But isn't that be a goldfish? Like when that saying is inferring is that you forget what just happened?
Yeah, it's true. That's the thing.
So then you are goldfish extraordinaire.
Yeah, but also I was eating goldfish as we started recording.
Very tasty snack. Big time snack here in the Golden household.
I was going to say, if anyone outside of North America is confused, like, it is a cracker. I was not swallowing live fish.
It's a cracker shaped like a goldfish. That's the goldfish point. But what's interesting about goldfish is, like, it's a cheese or cheddar or whatever simulated orange color flavor cracker, for the most part. The rainbow themed ones are real big here because Baby Force loves color, but they make limited edition pretzel version of the goldfish.
Those are good.
I'm a big fan of the pretzel.
But the salt vinegar ones are the absolute best, but harder to find.
Oh, I don't think I've had them.
Yeah, they're harder to find, but you must persist.
Well, I mean, that's what people tune into our show for, not to do with the Canuck snack speculation. It's snack takes. We should have, like, you know how we used to have off the rails?
Yeah.
It should be like C4 snack takes.
And they could be short content, snackable content.
Yeah, see? Little snacks. Look at this.
Brainstorm. This is great.
Yeah. But we are here to talk about the Vancouver Canucks. It is September. And it's, getting fast, close to a new season. Players are in town. They're skating. They're on the ice. Brock Besser is talking about hitting the gym hard. There's rumors of a captain because why wouldn't there be? Lots for us to start to dive into, and that we will as we rewind. I like how you put in the rundown. Strong rumors about Quinn as captain. I mean, yes, strong rumors. You've got Dhaliwal saying his sources are telling him it's Quinn. You've got Friedman saying, it's Quinn. And obviously it could be that Dhaliwal and Friedman have the same sources. But the way Quinn's sort of been talking as well has me believing these rumors to be true. These quote-unquote, as you call them, strong rumors.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously don't know for definite, but, like, if Dhaliwal says something, he doesn't say something unless he's pretty sure it's going to happen. And, as sure as we can be, I think, like, Canucks are naming a captain. I don't think they want to do the whole season without a captain thing that they did post Sedin's, which they had their reasons for. I don't know if they're good enough, but yeah, I think they kind of made that mistake once and don't want to do it again.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's sort of take that idea apart a little bit, because this is something that has been brought up. You know, Daniel over at Pass at the Bullis had talked about how having Quinn captain what's potentially a sinking ship in yeah. the Vancouver Canucks isn't fair to him, isn't a good way to start his tenure off. I don't subscribe to that theory.
Yeah.
But I do understand where Daniel is coming from if this, you know, puts Quinn into the cauldron and, you know, lets him, you know, melt away with the night in, night out media pressure if things go sideways right from the hop. But then if, let's say, that does happen, I feel that Quinn then has the ability to sort of, quote unquote, you know, earn his bones and come out of that, you know, much stronger as a result. But like, to me, we've talked about this on the show, whether it's a sinking ship, whether it's a team that, you know, is on the cusp of playoff potential or somehow all the pieces fall into place and this team is actually a playoff performer, Quinn is the guy. I mean, we may spit around names and dark horses, but Quinn is the guy in our mind.
Totally. And like, I do see where Wax is coming from. He's an empathetic guy and it does put a lot of pressure on Quinn, but Quinn's lived with pressure his entire life as a hockey player. Like, look who his parents are. Like, Jack Hughes, like, Jim Hughes, Jack's his brother. Legendary, like, hockey coach. Like, he went through the U.S. National Development Program. Like, his mom was closely involved in hockey. And then he's, like, the leader of his pack of brothers of rising hockey stars. Like, and it doesn't seem like it ever affected him. He sort of thrives under that pressure. And, like, even failing markets have to have leaders in. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it necessarily helps the team, the market, or Quinn to just say, you know, it's not fair to name a captain. Like, Arizona have a captain. Like, wait, do they actually?
Well, they have like 20 captains. It's just 19 yeah, they of them actually, on the injured yeah. reserve.
I was like, actually, maybe they don't have a captain, but like, I don't think it necessarily helps like struggling teams to not have captains.
Yeah, I too agree with that. Like, I feel the Vancouver Canucks need a captain. Having no C makes no sense. Now, an idea that I had sort of propagated in C4 when the rumor, you know, hit the airways was, could they approach it similar to how the team approached Lyndon as being captain? For those that don't know or recall, when the C transitioned from Stan Smeal to Trevor Lyndon, it wasn't a seamless, here you go, young mm-hmm. man, lead this team. Lyndon was provided an opportunity to wear a C on occasion, but he was also surrounded with leaders. I believe Doug Lidster at the time had the C on his chest as an example. I'm trying to think of who else would have been. Was Petri Skriko around then? Like, again, veteran players, not guys that you would necessarily throw the captaincy on full time, but good sort of caretakers to help, you know, this young man out. And help him sort of develop his demeanor as a leader, but also to establish this is what the room works like. And I mean, we think about it. We've talked about that. We've heard others talk about it. When the Sedins became, or Henrik became the captain, I feel Henrik, yeah. Daniel
yeah.
were a unit, but you had other quote unquote captains, like real strong voices that bought into the message that Hank was dropping. And I feel that that's where Lyndon benefited from. Bo, on the other hand, didn't really have that. Yes, he had these leaders, but then he was given a team without maybe the same strength that bought into the yeah. message around. And again, that's not a Bo issue. That is how this team was run in the leadership group and the management group. Now, fast forward to where we are today. Quinn as a leader, I think many will agree, save for those who say, no, it should be JT, or those who say, no, it should be Petey. And regardless of who it might be, I feel that JT carries with baggage. We talked about this in the last episode. And whether PD has baggage or not, is it possible that his bags are packed being the issue? Like, you name a captain, wow, it's PD, congratulations. And he decides Vancouver is just not where he wants to be long term. And I'm not trying to, you know, doomsday here. There was actually someone who engaged us on social media after last episode, and they really didn't like the fact we threw Garland's name in the mix.
I mean, it wasn't like we were seriously considering Garland as a captain, but he's
considering like how soon the reply came in. That person did not listen to the episode. They bought into what I put in the tweet. But
wow,
the thing about this is that if Quinn is the leader, does JT buy into his message? Does he support Quinn? I'm not trying to say there's a schism in any way, shape, or form, but there are some very strong personalities that Quinn's going to have to deal with if he's got the C on his chest.
Oh, yeah. And I don't think it's necessarily going to be easy, but I think the kind of Canucks need some direction for sure, and I think you need to sort of make that decision, right? You make that choice that Quinn is the future of the team. Petey is also the future of the team. He could be, but like, he doesn't have a new contract and he doesn't need the distraction of being captain. By the way, Arizona's last permanent captain was OEL, so look how that went. I thought they had made someone captain in between, but I guess that didn't last long.
They do have captains, and they just all happen to be on the LTIR.
Yeah.
Chris, you know, Pronger is their captain right now. Actually, is he on the books anymore? Did he finally earn his last dollar? I think
maybe last year was like the last year or something. So, but like Henrik, like looking back, he did not become captain in the best of circumstances, right? Like, the former captain was still on the team. Like, Luongo's captain, like, that's got to be it.
Yeah, but I don't, like, Luongo being captain was a team wanting to make a splash, an organization wanting to make a splash. They had a guy who, he'd probably say yes to anything because he was that leader. But I believe Luongo also realized that being the captain wasn't necessarily a distraction that he needed in his world. But moreover, not wearing the C didn't make him less a leader. And I actually feel he thrived much better when that captaincy wasn't on his shoulders and Hank was able to then take that load off him. He was still a leader.
Yeah, totally. I just think it's still a weird energy, like, the idea of Luongo as captain didn't work. Like, Luongo clearly, you know, wanted to lead his team and he failed. Like, not necessarily through his own fault.
The way you describe it, it's like Louis went up to the front office and said, give me the C. I don't think that's how it was. No, I think it was the reverse.
Neither do I. Yeah, I think you're right. Completely right there. But I just think that it's not, that wasn't necessarily ideal circumstances when Henrik became captain either. Bo was the most inevitable thing in history, but it still took him a year of getting tested trial by fire by the team before they let him be captain. Yeah. Even though he'd been like handpicked by the Sedins. So I don't necessarily think it's, you can't wait for an ideal situation to make a young player captain. Like, you just have to, if he's right for the role, give it to him.
Now, the captaincy, that'll get announced at some point, presumably at a game in Vancouver. They don't have too many of those to kick off the season. But if, let's say, it doesn't happen right away, the other issue is, how will the team do? Over the course of the next few weeks, we're going to sort of talk a little bit about players that we see on the roster. Obviously, trades can happen, and with our luck, they probably would. Because the Canucks still remain in cap trouble. But the three that we wanted to talk about now that they're back on the ice are arguably some of the three most important players, at least up front on the team, that are Petey, JT, and Brock. Now, Anna, I ask you this. Do you believe we will get a better season or a worse season from each of those three?
I'm going to say better, worse. Wait, what did we go in?
Oh, I can't remember. But here, why don't we go with the rundown? Brock, JT, Petey.
Then better, worse, better.
You think JT will have a worse season from a bad season?
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe like he'll do slightly better on the stat sheet, but I think overall the trend is downwards.
I mean, that's scary on a number of fronts. One, that contract is a problem, because if it's already downhill from here, two, I think JT didn't have a good season last year.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, for sure. I guess what I'm saying is he's not going to have a bounce back. Like, he's on a plateau to downwards. Maybe he has a slight rise here, but it's not gonna be a steady increase over time. And obviously maybe I'm being negative about JT, and maybe I'm being overly positive about Brock. Like, he had all these same interviews last year saying, you know, I didn't do well enough last year, I was going through some stuff, but this is, you know, not what I expect from myself. I expect myself to be better. Was he better? Like, not in patches, but yeah.
Well, mine is better, better, best. Like, I see improved seasons for all three. Now, let me talk about Brock. Brock has taken, I think, the feedback he received from Tocchet to heart. He completely changed his off-season sort of routine. And as he disclosed, he hit the gym hard, really looked on to come to camp strong and fit. And that's not to suggest in the past he wasn't. Like, I think he performed in the, you know, the beauty league and what have you. But what he wanted to do is he wanted to come to camp with the ability to perform with strength in the preseason and to maybe have more speed as well. And I think that that serves Brock well. I mean, he's coming off a tough season on a number of counts. The season itself was tough. He sort of fell out of favor, but now I think the organization has come to the idea that Brock is part of our future for now. Asterisk being, who knows how they get out of cap trouble, and Brock might be a piece to that puzzle. But I have good feelings about Brock. JT, I feel he has to be better. Now, better to last season. That's the comparable. Is this going to be the JT of two seasons previous? I don't know. But he has been saying the right things. And there was some thought that Tocchet was the coach to come and make or break JT. And if he makes Miller play better, great. And in Petey, dude's going into a contract year.
Yeah.
He wants to get paid.
And I think we'll see, I think we'll see just Petey at his very best, like you said, and I think his all-around game will improve, and his offensive game will just be at its peak. It will just be great to watch, and we will enjoy it at least for next season, and we'll see what happens after that. But I think your instincts are right on Brock, on that he's responding well to Rick Tocchet, for one, which has happened to quite a few players, and two, something he struggled with is injury, right? And he's never really been at his like physical best since probably his rookie sophomore year. Yeah, that kind of underlying strength going into the season may really help him.
Yeah. What are your thoughts as a listener? Let us know either in C4 Discord, discord.io/C4podcast, or through social media at the C4 Podcast. We'll take ourselves here a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? That because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
As we let off up there in the rewind, well, actually, no, we let off with Quinn being captain. But we did sort of get into the fact that the team is back on the ice. They are warming up for an upcoming preseason. In fact, I want to say like their first game is only like a week away. Is it the preseason that's the week away? Yeah, like the
I think that might be 2 weeks. That Young Stars, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was getting confused with.
Yeah, 2 weeks against the Calgary Flames. Yes, they are practicing at UBC at the Doug Mitchell currently, with one of their spots, another being 8 rinks. I'm sure there are a few others around town that they hop around in because, yeah, they do not have a practice rink currently. But friend of the show, David Quadrelli, did break the story that they are looking to build one at SFU campus. I guess that's the Burnaby Mountain campus because there's no space for it in any of their other campuses, I would guess. So yeah, in the concrete jungle that is SFU Burnaby Mountain. It's not in Vancouver, but like it's not far. I just think it's honestly wild that we're in the year of our Lord 2023 and the Canucks do not have a practice rink.
Well, now, one thing to also consider, now this is very convoluted, but the Aquilinis, I think, have a deal with the city of Vancouver, or are at least involved in a deal with the city of Vancouver. And I believe it's Concord Pacific who currently owns the land sort of across the street right on Cole Harbor. Mm-hmm. And the redevelopment of that land, which is currently empty. And then I think also it includes like Enterprise Hall and I don't know what the old name of the building, maybe it is part of Enterprise Hall, but the X86 buildings, was the development of a recreational facility that include a rink. And in the initial sort of planning phase from way back when of yesteryear, the Canucks were going to be using that and contributing some, I think, money to be their practice rink. Like this was sort of the idea and the vision. Now, as things have sort of unfolded over the many years, Concord Pacific, not so much in a hurry to develop the land. And since then, there have been some discussions as to, do we really need to build a rink or a recreational facility? Because this land's pretty expensive and it seems like, you know, not a good use of the, you know, land in our idea. And again, stalemate. So I don't look at the Canucks and say, you know, what are you doing? But that said, if they are going and partnering with SFU, there is an interesting component because SFU has, in my memory, never been a hockey university. It is the football university. Granted, they exit the football program. Like women's softball, rugby, like these are the sports that really, you know, stick out in memory. So this is unique because UBC Thunderbirds, that was the hockey university sort of in British Columbia. The other piece of the puzzle, though, when it comes to up on the hill, when it snows, it's a tough place to get to and from.
Yeah.
Are they building the gondola to like stop at the rink?
Yeah, constantly. Yeah, that's a great point, actually, because so I used to play netball out there at Burnaby Mountain, and it was just a case of, like, in the winter, it was just like, get it in and get out as quick as possible, because if it snows, you do not want to be stuck on Burnaby Mountain. Yeah, it is interesting, like, just the constant Vancouver and development, and we're not going to get into the weeds here because, one, I don't know enough about it, but just, like, the Aquilinis have a lot of power as property developers in Vancouver. Like, there's very few large property developers that have the kind of power that they do, but Vancouver and not doing things in its own interest has pretty much always gone hand in hand. But like you said, like SFU not known for their hockey program, but UBC almost lost varsity status and they're constantly in danger of losing their hockey program. I think the Canucks had to like give them money to keep them going, and they've certainly like raised funds for them. And like, because how embarrassing would that be that like you have an NHL team using your practice rink and you can't fund a hockey program? Like, yeah, UBC has a lot of money, but not necessarily using it in the right ways. I mean, they are refusing to pay the amount the city wants them to extend the SkyTrain to UBC. So it's still not going to UBC after all these years. So it's just a series of institutions acting pretty clumsily, let's say. But like, if you're a serious NHL team, you need a permanent practice rink. You can't be.
I agree. And the fact that the Vancouver Canucks haven't had one for a while is kind of silly, but it's not the fault, I think, of the team in that regard. Like, and I actually just sort of Googled because I was curious, did I get the details right? It may not have been Concord Pacific. I use them because Concord Pacific essentially owns the majority of the X86 lands. The Rennie Group, is talking about it. There's a Canadian Metropolitan Properties proposal, developing the Plaza of Nations into a big part of Vancouver's new waterfront entertainment district. There'll be an NHL-sized ice rink at the new Vancouver Park Board-operated community center in partnership with the Aquilini Investment Group. And the idea was that the Vancouver Canucks would use it during the day, and the general public could use it for the remainder of the day starting in the late morning. It would be a state-of-the-art sports science facility with a physiotherapy clinic and science center. And that would also be available to the public when not in use of the players. Like, this is what False Creek was going to be, like right across the street.
Yeah.
This is from like a post in 2018, not that long ago in the grand scheme of things. And here we are up in the hill now. So,
yeah, I mean, it's crazy that, yeah, was, I know COVID and whatever, that might have stalled things, but it's just such a, like, win of an idea for me, just for public use, partnering with like NHL quality facilities, but allowing the public to also get benefits from that. Like, that just makes so much sense to me. And instead, it's like occasionally a festival ground, like for the food trucks, or just like, it's just not in constant use at all. And it's just such a waste. It's such a big area for nothing to happen.
Yeah. You know, thinking about the Burnaby proposal a little bit further, and I, you know, I'm credit to Quads here, because he brought it up in his article. SFU is an NCAA school. Like, this is something that I often forget in Canada, is that I believe there's only one NCAA, which for those who aren't in North America is the United States sort of collegiate system, is that NCAA, the college hockey program in the United States, doesn't really have much of a presence outside of the Midwest, if you want to even suggest that's the case. It's not really West. But if NCAA hockey comes to Canada, that's huge. Like, Canada is a hockey nation, and that would be a presence on the West Coast that I think SFU as a collegiate sports school would definitely buy into. And again, this it's all in the article that, that David Quattrelli had, had written. I'm not suggesting anything new here, but him saying that has me buying what they're selling.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be huge, especially for like a school like SFU. Like, it's still, it's a big school and it's an important sports school, but like, yeah, definitely not for hockey in the past. So I think it would be massive. It does seem like they it's the kind of facility previously occupied by the BCHL, so like big enough, right? Like, we you see pictures from Canucks road trips of some of the practice rinks that the team go around in, and they look, I'll be honest, a little janky at times.
Well, their purpose-built facilities often attached to a rink. Like, they're
varying quality, let's just put it that way.
Agreed, but they're not like, they're not designed to have like the multi-purpose entertainment center that here in Canada we're accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, it's true. And like,
and that's only where there's like purpose-built practice facilities.
Don't the Rangers have like their practice facility in Chelsea Piers or something? So it's like,
maybe, but
kind
like
of incredible location, like in the middle of the city, but like the actual facility.
I could be wrong here, but Madison Square Garden is the repurposing of a subway station, I think.
Right.
Or like a train station, like it.
Yeah.
They did a pretty good job there with MSG.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. There's lots of like US teams, obviously, that share their rinks with other sports, which Canucks don't do. Like, the ice comes in and out for concerts, but like not anywhere near as frequently as, yeah, other teams are doing.
I mean, they have, they do have lacrosse that gets in the mix.
Oh, yeah.
Loosely, like,
I mean, sure, but like,
they'd love to have an NBA franchise that would make things difficult, but they just don't want to pay the NBA money to make it happen.
Yeah, but like, the Canucks are the most important thing that goes on at Rogers Arena. Like, LA Kings are the third most important team in their arena.
Okay, I mean, events make that barn a ton of cash.
Yeah, yeah. But
I would argue concerts are the most important thing. I know what you're saying, though.
Like, yeah, I would just say, like, they don't come in as much as, like, other barns deal with.
Agreed.
Like, the ice shifting out, which affects the ice quality. So, like, practicing at Rogers is still, like, obviously you can't do it all the time, but, like, that works in ways that, like, think the LA Kings are getting in, like, they don't get first dibs at their facility. They can't even park in the arena or they get told off.
Well, okay, isn't like Crypto's got what? Lakers, Clippers, and Kings. I don't think they have another tenant.
No, they, I mean, that
then
would be
it's just
crazy.
Events, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize they couldn't park in the rink.
Yeah, I remember seeing, I can't remember which player it was, but that it was something to do with like the Lakers and the Clippers being on the road. So one of the Kings players parked in the rink and then security told him to move.
Awesome. I remember there was a point in the playoffs this past season where the rink or the barn was so busy. I shouldn't say rink because two different basketball teams were playing.
Yeah.
That over the course of the weekend, they had to change the floor because there's two different basketball teams. That's like different floor for each and have like, ice. Like, I want to say like a half dozen times over the course of a weekend because of how tight the scheduling was between hockey and basketball. In fact, I want to say there was one day or night or day and night where both the Clippers and the Lakers played.
Whoa. Is that like, a thing?
I like, again, this is a memory that could be very foggy here, but like, I mean,
but yeah, it just, it must be incredible, the planning, but also the energy that they are wasting by like putting the, getting the ice in and out. Like, just think about the carbon emissions. But like, you know, hockey play a lot, like basketball play a decent amount too. Like,
so I was correct. So I wasn't mistaken here. You had, so I found the tweet, Thursday, NBA game. Friday, NHL. Saturday, day, NBA. Saturday night, NBA. Sunday, NHL. Monday, NBA. Now, it doesn't say which of the Clippers and Lakers
yeah, but
the
like,
NBA,
yeah,
but
they,
the
they
context is the same.
Saturday afternoon and Saturday night. That's wild.
Yeah. And the tweet says, the process takes 60 employees and 2 hours to complete. So each changeover, 60 people get it done in 2 hours. And they have actually a time lapse of the events. And it does show. It shows you have like the Lakers floor turning into the Clippers floor or vice versa. And then the ice for the Kings, the rink, the boards and the whatnot get taken out because basketball is much more condensed, more floor seats. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, Rogers Arena. Never even had to do that when the Grizz were in town. Like, they had the transition, but I don't think at any point in time was it ever that crazy. Plus, yeah, the Grizz never made the playoffs, so got to a point in the season where it didn't matter for them.
But, yeah, it is interesting that obviously that we talked about it last time with the Drake concert getting cancelled because Canucks put in a new Jumbotron that was unsafe. Like, that's got to be embarrassing. Just if the concerts are what is making money and Drake is just like a huge concert, like, I don't know how quick some people will be coming back after that. So, yeah, maybe we'll see some more artists skipping Vancouver on that tour.
So if you heard the last show and you were curious, did the second date go off? It did. And the rescheduled date, they went off without a hitch. Drake was in town. I saw pictures of the scoreboard. Mm-hmm. And like so if you've seen the sort of artist's rendition, it shows the digital display on the inside as well, angled down. So like if you're down low, you can look up and you can see sort of like the score bug or whatever. That part's still incomplete, or it was. So they had like the panels up around on the outside, but not on the inside. On the inside, it was just like, you know, like an erector set. I'm aging myself here. So it's like metal girders. So as a kid, you could get these like iron, you know, girders and sort of build construction. Okay. They called it an erector set because you erected a building. Not what you're thinking, because you have a dirty, dirty mind.
Well, yeah, why were we? But yeah, do you think that like players think about this kind of thing in terms of not having a practice rink? Like, do you think this sort of comes into players' minds of?
No, honestly, I think, well, okay. I think when it comes to contract negotiation, maybe, you know, facilities play into that, you know, where do I sign conversation? But I don't think players are too concerned as to where they practice, so long as the facility provides them what they need to get ready, isn't too inconvenient to get to, especially on days where there's a morning practice and an evening game and that type
Good
of
luck,
thing.
JT driving over from West Van to Burnaby Mountain, but like,
well, that'll be an interesting experience. But again, maybe at that point the gondola will have been built and they'll add like an additional sea bus station and there'll be like the occasional trip to the other side of the mountain. I don't know.
Yeah, I just think it is sort of interesting looking at the bigger picture of ownership investment. Like, you know, we've been, and we talked about this last time, but like we've been crying out for Rogers getting some kind of upgrade, and
it is now.
Like, well, but to the seats, to the overall
apparently
experience.
That's next season. Allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly. Like, the things they've invested in is a scoreboard. Like, I get that it looks cool and is an improvement, but one, it didn't work and delayed a concert.
Okay. They left themselves like a couple of weeks to make it all happen. Like, they were maybe a little aggressive in their timelines. Mm-hmm. It's not that the scoreboard doesn't work. It simply hadn't been fully put together yet.
Yeah, something was falling off it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, it's not like I would have put that in the top five things that I think Rogers Arena needed. And I definitely wouldn't have put, like, a fancy, like, block of seats for the rich people.
But the rich people are rich, and you want some of that richness.
I get it, but like the fact that it's been so long with the Canucks having poor overall arena quality.
As I have said on the show previously, the day they update the Orca Bay Sports and Entertainment, you know, foldable chairs is the day that I believe we're going to see them reseat the Raj.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's about time that they invested in the players, and I think having a permanent practice rink is, like, just key. That's just even optics-wise.
And they will, up on the hill, right next to the gondola station.
Yeah. And then the players all get stuck there, like when there's a snowstorm, and the Canucks have to cancel a game because the Canucks are stuck on Burnaby Mountain.
As I think I've talked about on the show, the Vancouver Canucks actually had to cancel a game that they couldn't get to in Vancouver because of snow. So,
I mean,
in fairness, San Jose was here, and they couldn't leave Vancouver because of the snow either. But
yeah, I've been to football games that have been canceled because of the snow when, like, all the catering are there, all the players are there, half the crowd is there, already there, and then they cancel it because it's too unsafe to get to the stadium.
Yeah. So I think, you know, people who've listened to the show a long time recall that one of the podcasts I listen to is Dear Hank and John. The hosts are John and Hank Green. It's somewhat on hiatus, but John Green is he's not an owner because of how AFC Wimbledon is structured, but he is, and he sponsors the team. He talks about how the number one issue facing the team is often the dastardly evil entity, Frozen Pitch.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Like, if you don't have the facilities, it's so easy for, like, with the weather in England as it is, for
pitch a frozen pitch.
Dangerous in some way. Like, Arsenal's pitch is, like, incredibly high-end, so they don't usually have to deal with that. Quick sidebar on Wimbledon, though, like, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, but I just read a book about the whole Wimbledon saga of, like, franchising in the one time, or the one time in
Milton Keynes.
Yeah, and it's called Underground Overground, which is a reference to the Wombles. And if you don't know what Wombles are, like, look them up on YouTube and thank me later.
Okay, I will. As we sort of look to wrap up this episode, we would do a disservice if we didn't talk about the PWHL has gotten itself going in its new form. Just a quick recap, 6 teams competing in the league. They are Montreal, Toronto, New York, Boston, Ottawa, and Minneapolis, St. Paul. And their free agency period of 10 days kicked off on September 1st. That time, teams were able to sign 3 players. And then the 18th is when the draft will take place. So it's kind of unique in that the free agency period allows you to sign any player. It's sort of an open market, but you can only sign 3. And then the draft takes place, as to which the rest of the players sort of get picked. So they lose their sort of choice in the matter. To some respect, but then teams have a training camp in November, and they need at least 28 players to attend. I would imagine those players who don't get picked in the draft, because there are a lot, because you had more teams prior to this amalgamation. It is possible that some of them may sign as free agents after the draft, but again, that is now, I'd say underway. The 10-day period is today.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we've kind of seen some big names sign here and there, and I don't know if any of them are, like, particularly shocking. Maybe Hillary Knight signing for Boston, that's a big deal. But Kendall Coyne Schofield signed in Minnesota. Marie-Philippe Poulin and Desbiens signed in Montreal, kind of expected. Sarah Nurse signed in Toronto, so some really big names there. I do feel like I've kind of losing the momentum and the excitement that was kind of generated when they announced their team, and then very quickly, you know, they're announcing player signings and people were really excited. And now it's like, oh, now we wait for the draft and like...
Which is a full week away.
And I can't help feel like I'm obviously saying this as a disgruntled Connecticut Whale fan, but like...
Hartford just can't catch a break.
Yeah, they really cannot. I'm very glad I invested in some more merch last year. Yeah, just like it feels like completely absent. Like the PHF feels completely absent. Like obviously the star players were always going to be like PWHL. There's a reason that like continued. There's a reason they didn't sign in the PHF. There was getting a few maybe bigger stars in the last few years of the PHF. But yeah, it does very much feel like a PWHL league. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I get why they're not starting until January, but that just feels like they've got a lot to sort out. But at the same time, it just feels like they're not generating any interest right now where they could be. Like, they've got these huge signings. Like,
I
don't know, make some noise, I think.
I hear what you're saying, but I also think it's important that the league needs to ensure it gets it right. Without setting expectations that are too high out of the gate that they might not be able to meet. Like it's a weird spot to be in with the app, you know, the post amalgamation of the two, in that you are now sort of pressing a reset button. And at the same time, you're sort of also, you know, steering this course into somewhat uncharted territory. And it's not like you can take a previous model and just simply say, here we go, this is how we're going to do it. Like, I'm not suggesting you're wrong. I think you're right. One of my complaints with you know, my other podcast is long off seasons with limited hype.
Yeah.
You build all this momentum. Yes, there needs to be a point where there's this sort of pause where you catch your breath, but catching your breath shouldn't last 4 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know you're saying like, this is their shot. They have to get it right. They'll finally have some NHL support. The NHL have been very, very vague on what that might look like. But they've...
So that's because the NHL isn't really prioritizing the idea of support other than lip service and...
Exactly. But yeah, I just think there's some really interesting characters from a player point of view in there. Sarah Nurse is like just one of the most interesting people if you've ever heard her interviewed or speaking. She was featured in the Black Ice documentary as well, and just like hugely skilled players, of course, as well. But like, they've got such opportunity with these players that they've already signed here. So I really hope they build on that. I hope they make some noise with the draft. And what I really, really hope for is that my gals, Kennedy Marchmont and Taylor Gerrard, end up on the same team so that I'm not forced to pick between them.
You're going to get forced to pick between them.
I know I am. But they're such a good duo. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here we are at the end of this week's episode. We will be back again next week with another show. That's right. We are back into the swing of things. It is a new season upon us. There is hockey to talk about. Maybe not as much as we would like in the beginning, but once Young Stars happens, camp gets underway, preseason kicks off. That's only a couple of weeks away. A lot more for us to get into. Our plan is with the season to, again, have a little more fun. As Anna and I are apt to do, we're not going to shy away from any tough topics, and we'll still continue to look to get guests, some of which you are used to on the show and others as to which are going to be brand spanking new. Because when you're, you know, the best mediocre Canucks hockey podcast out there, you know, one of the top 137, number one in Angola, you got to differentiate.
Yep. I did try and explain the whole number one in Angola thing to my friend's elderly grandparents the other week. They were very confused. I mean, what? Starting from the fact that they didn't know what a podcast was, and we had to explain what a podcast was, which is like, it's like radio, but not live.
You know, shout out to our Angolan fans who definitely exist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm genuinely curious. If you're truly listening to our show in Angola, that is awesome. It truly is awesome. But we need to somehow connect. Like, you know, like how do we elevate you as a listener on our show, our Angolan listeners, mm-hmm. number one Angola. Better than any other hockey podcast, number one in Angola. Anna, what final words of wisdom do you have for everyone this week?
Like, I can smell hockey in the air. It's coming back.
Are you sure that's not smoke? Because it was back too.
Yeah, that was back too. Also, sometimes you smell bad things because, which I think might have to do with the dock workers being on strike. But yeah, that's Vancouver for you. But like, I saw a picture of Petey smiling whilst wearing a Canucks helmet and skating in Vancouver. And like, that just brought me some joy in this tough time we live in. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's a fun time of year when hockey returns. It's like, you know, yeah, a year sort of goes from January to December. But for us, this is a new year, like when the puck drops on the ice, and it just signifies to us sort of the potential of exciting times. And let's be honest, the Vancouver Canucks in the first game of every season are going to win the Stanley Cup. At the end of that first game, we may have doubts.
Yeah, but like, it's like
slate is a pure joy.
Yeah, Schrodinger's cat, you know, like Canucks, like Stanley Cup chances, we don't know what they are right now. They are both alive and dead until we open the box and blow the whistle in the first game.
Yeah. And if they win, that's obviously plan the parade.
Exactly.
If you want to check out our broken website, c4podcast.com, you can. It's broken. If anyone out there has skills that can actually go and whip one together, it doesn't have to be shiny, just something that works. We would be forever grateful. Sometime around, I might go and look into fixing it, but until such time, it remains broken. The widget, though, for our entire back catalog-ish works, and I say ish because of reasons, which we can't get into in the show. You can follow us on social media at the C4 Podcast, whatever the heck X is or Twitter is. We have a Facebook page. We just don't use it all that often, and I don't think we're on Mastodon yet. And yeah, if you ever feel the desire to help Anna and I out and cover the costs of the show or potentially just a pint, you can head to support.c4podcast.com and throw us a few bones. You can either do that on an individual basis, one-off, or alternatively, you can sign up on a monthly or annual basis. And to Rich, Neil, and Anna's mom, I found the stickers. I need to get them in the mail. It will happen. So for those of you who haven't signed up, you can figure out how to get a sticker too on Buy Me a Coffee, or as we call it, Anna,
Buy Me a Pint.
So on behalf of Anna Forsythe at A4Size03, myself, Chris at Lightforce, I'm going to sign off this episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com, with We Out.